As of this live broadcast on Thursday, the 2016 general election is just 33 days away. Who better to discuss the election than reporters who can talk about their experiences in covering Kentucky politics? On this week's Eastern Standard, we'll also hear from Kentucky's Secretary of State.
This is a presidential election. Every seat of Kentucky's House of Representatives is up for election. Half of our state Senate, as well as a judicial race, a Supreme Court race. These are important offices that determine what's going to happen not only at the national level, but at the local level as well.
We're interested in your questions, comments, or personal stories about this election or elections past. Write to us by email at wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, post to the WEKU Facebook page, or send a tweet at WEKUEST. In just a little while, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Today we have a full roundtable welcoming back reporters and journalists who have graced this table for discussions in previous shows. Our topic today, in about 33 days, the presidential election is occurring, and we're going to talk politics and the election, not just the presidential election, maybe some state issues, and we'd be interested in hearing from you, our listeners, about local elections that are on your mind, any races, anything going on in your community in terms of campaigning and politics that you think we should know about. With us in the studio, we have with us Adam Beam of the Associated Press. And Adam, of looking at my materials, make sure I get it correct, State House correspondent for the Associated Press. Thank you for being with us once again on Eastern Standard.
Thank you for having me.
Ronnie Ellis is the Capitol Bureau correspondent for CNHI News. And the folks in Richmond, Madison County are familiar with his work via the Richmond Register. Ronnie, thanks once again for being with us.
It's a pleasure.
And, of course, Public Radio Capitol Bureau Chief Ryland Barton. Ryland, who covers the State House and political stories for public radio stations across the state. Ryland, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, John.
First up, before we get into a conversation with our reporters around the table and before we hear from you, our listeners, let's hear from Kentucky's Secretary of State. A few weeks ago, the Secretary of State's office contacted me and said she was going to be in town. Would we like to speak with her? And I did invite Allison Lundergan-Grimes to the studio for a few minutes to talk a little bit about issues such as voter registration and her efforts to encourage voter participation. And we thought, with just a few days left for voters to get registered for this very important general election, we'd go ahead and hear from Allison Lundergan-Grimes. Meanwhile, I will tell you that we're interested in hearing from you, our listeners. Give us a call at 800-621-8890. Be part of the program by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKUEST, post on Facebook or the WEKU website. Now, Allison Lundergan-Grimes, Secretary of State for the Commonwealth of Kentucky, discussing the upcoming November election.
November 8th will be upon us before we know it, and we are trying to make sure that all eligible Kentuckians are first registered to vote, and second, that they have that needed push to actually get out and exercise their vote on November 8th. We've taken some great steps in the Office of Secretary of State, both from the perspective of updating our laws as well as pushing new programs that we hope will make that process easier, whether you're in the military or whether you are someone that's here in Kentucky when it comes, for instance, to registration. Just launching online voter registration back in March of 2016. We have already seen hundreds of thousands of folks actually visit govotekentucky.com, but importantly, 35,000 Kentuckians updating their registration, registering, 2,600 of which are 18-year-olds that are registering for the first time. It is a huge asset, obviously history for Kentucky to become the 31st state in the nation to offer online voter registration, something I hope will be an asset as we go into this presidential election, general election coming up November 8th.
What do prospective voters need to know about that process at this point? If someone who's never voted before, never registered before, maybe they're a newcomer to Kentucky, what are some timelines, deadlines in terms of their eligibility for November?
to be eligible to vote here in Kentucky, you have to be 18 by November 8th. You also have to have no prior record, or if so, you've gotten a pardon from the governor. Everybody mentally competent live here in Kentucky, not claim to register to vote elsewhere. We encourage you, you meet those requirements, to actually go online. GoVoteKentucky.com. It's our one-stop election portal. There, folks can actually register to vote, or if they believe they're already registered, they can check their registration. If they have moved, for instance, within a county or outside of a county, they can actually update their registration all right there. If you need to make any changes to your registration, including adding a telephone number or email to get updates, you can do it all online, GoVoteKentucky.com.
What would be the deadline?
Our books actually close 30 days prior to the November 8th election. So go online, GoVoteKentucky.com. Make sure you are registered, update your information, and you can actually figure out where you go vote, see your polling location, get driving directions, see the ballot, actually not only see a sample ballot, if you wanted to see the filing papers for the individuals that are going to be on that ballot. This is all accessible at your fingertips, on your mobile device. We are making history here in the Commonwealth as folks are able to have all of this right at their fingertips.
What is your position on such innovations as early voting or even same-day walk-in registration to make it easy for people to choose to participate?
Here in the Commonwealth, we're paralyzed by paper. Our elections are relegated to moving at the speed of paper. And by taking our systems online, whether it be our statewide voter registration system, now online voter registration, we are able to give people what they have been expecting for quite some time. Obviously, we have to make sure that the integrity of the election is maintained. But as we have seen with 30 other states offering online voter registration, it's been a tremendous success. Proud Kentucky's the 31st. I hope that this will not be the only positive advancement that we will see, especially this year. I hope in 2017, when the General Assembly comes back, we will update our laws and allow early voting without an excuse. Right now, we already have that in-person early voting, but people in Kentucky have to provide an excuse to be able to do that. My hope is that we can join 37 other states that already offer this convenience. It is quite cumbersome for the working men and women, for especially students, to be able to vote on one day and one day only. We need to make that easier, especially if we're going to increase participation, which that is what our democracy is founded upon, is the ability of people to get out and exercise that right that so many have sacrificed their lives for. This past primary, 20% turnout. That means 80% of Kentuckians stayed home and didn't cast a vote in the primary election. We can do better than that. And I think online voter registration obviously ensures that we get everybody registered. We now need to remove the barrier that's in people's way. That's the timing with which they actually have to cast that vote. We can do that with early voting. Right now, we have it here in Kentucky. We just require people to have an excuse. And I want our General Assembly, and especially our county clerks, many of whom have stood in the way of this initiative, to realize that people shouldn't have to offer up an excuse to be able to vote early here in Kentucky.
You and other Secretary of States and election officials have a habit often of making some kind of projection about voter turnout prior to major elections. When is that a possibility prior to the November 8th election?
Well, we do have historical models that we can follow from the prior presidential elections, be it 2012 or 2008. We know turnout in those elections hovered anywhere above 50% to 60%. But we will be monitoring absentee voting, which, as we talked about, Kentucky does offer early voting. It's known as absentee voting. You just have to have an excuse, military, third trimester of pregnancy, age, disability, illness. Those are the reasons that individuals can cast an absentee ballot. We'll monitor that period of absentee voting and make our projection most likely about 2 weeks prior to the election.
On a more personal level, you spoke at the Democratic National Convention. Can you talk about that? I assume you've attended conventions before. Is that true? Was this your first convention? And talk about that experience of actually speaking before those hundreds, I guess thousands of participants and delegates?
Just a few more cameras than Fancy Farm. What an amazing experience and a huge privilege. Many people go a lifetime without ever getting the opportunity to be on that stage. And I was privileged to be there representing and speaking on behalf of someone who I have known for over 30 years, many decades. I've known her in many capacities. I hope to be able to call her Madam President. To be there to have the back of someone who has had my back for many, many years and encouraged me to be a part of being the change that I want to see in this world. It was a tremendous experience and was joined by folks from all over the Commonwealth of Kentucky. And as we can see right now, there's a lot at stake in this election. But I hope that people will realize, especially as Kentucky's chief election official, it is important that they get out and vote. Their vote is their voice. And as my grandmother's always used to say, you can't complain if you actually don't go out and vote on election day. So take the steps now to make sure that you are registered to vote. This is a presidential election. Importantly, every seat of Kentucky's House of Representatives is up for election. Half of our state Senate, as well as a judicial race, a Supreme Court race that are on the ballot. These are important offices that determine what's going to happen not only at the national level, but at the local level as well. And people need to be engaged. Democracy isn't just one day on election day. It is 365 days a year. It begins today by people going online at govotekentucky.com to make sure they're registered to vote. And importantly, make sure they show up on November 8th to have their voice heard and cast that ballot.
Kentucky Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And the deadline for voter registration, October 11th.
Tuesday.
That's Tuesday. And today, our program is live, of course, on Thursday, October 6th, repeating on Sunday evening. Secretary of State Allison Lundergan Grimes speaking with us on this week's Eastern Standard. Now, we're going to turn to our panel of journalists, our roundtable. We have Ryland Barton, Ronnie Ellis, and Adam Beam here ready to speak with you, to interact with you on the politics of the presidential race. We have House races across the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We have the U.S. Senate race for the seat currently held by Senator Rand Paul. We have, as Allison Lundergan Grimes pointed out, every House seat in the State General Assembly and half of the Senate up for election this year. We're interested in your questions, your comments for our reporters at 800-621-8890 or by email wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. And we're going to take a station break in just about 1 minute, but let me ask each of you gentlemen around the race, what are you all covering? So, for instance, Adam, what are you doing? What stories are you following in this election year?
Well, I think this is an unusual election year in that most of the top federal races are not really that competitive. And so the state House races is what's taken up a lot of my attention, just because this is the last legislative chamber in the South that's still controlled by Democrats. Republicans are making a big push to take it.
And Ronnie Ellis?
I'm the same way. I'm splitting what little time I have for the campaign between the state House races and the U.S. Senate race.
But off the air, you commented to me you're spending a lot of time following the governor as well.
Well, the governor is taking a lot of the air out of the campaign coverage because of the various controversies he seems to find himself in.
And Ryland Barton.
Same deal, covering U.S. State House races every now and then, blip on the U.S. Senate race. And other than that, we're all covering the governor and the attorney general and all these lawsuits flying around Frankfurt.
We'll come back and talk about some of those issues in just a few moments. 800-621-8890, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. Post on Facebook or the website at weku.fm.
I want to grow up to be a politician and take over this beautiful land. I want to grow up to be a politician and be the old U.S. of A's number one man.
I'll it's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, the Reporters Roundtable. We're a little more than a month away from the big election, the biggest event in politics every 4 years, and we have reporters around the table with us, Adam Beam of the Associated Press, Ronnie Ellis of CNHI Newspapers, and Rylan Barton of Kentucky Public Radio here to discuss these issues, to discuss this election with you, our listeners, at 800-621-8890, or send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We really would like to get you into the conversation. Got questions, comments, stories about elections past, maybe reflections on how this election and, of course, this presidential election taking the center stage for most people, this is most on our minds to a great extent. How does this one compare to other elections that you have experienced over your life? 800-621-8890. Let's begin our conversation by talking about what's on the ballot. I've got some sample ballots in front of me for Fayette County, Madison County, Perry County, Franklin County. And, of course, WEKU reaching many other counties in the Commonwealth of Kentucky. But when folks go to the polls, let's just talk starting with Fayette County because it's the biggest community that we serve right now. What are you voting on besides making a selection between Trump and Hillary? Who wants to start us off there?
Well, of course, you have the U.S. Senate race, which everybody in Kentucky is going to vote on. That's between, you know, Rand Paul, the incumbent Republican, and Jim Gray, who's the mayor of Lexington. So residents of Fayette County will certainly be familiar with him. And also in Fayette County, you have the 6th District congressional race, which is between Andy Barr, who's seeking, I believe, a second or third term, in office, Republican. And he's running against Nancy Jo Kemper, the Democrat. And what's interesting to me about that race is that that's a seat that's really drawn to benefit Democrats, and yet Andy Barr seems to keep winning there. So, Democrats keep thinking they're going to make a push there, but Andy seems to, every cycle so far he's been able to keep winning. And then you've got, you know, your local state House and Senate races, and I'm not sure where the 5th District in the Supreme Court is located. I'm not sure if that includes Fayette County or not.
I think it does. I mean, Mary Noble, I believe, is from Lexington, and she's not running for re-election in that district.
So Fayette County voters will get to choose a member of the state Supreme Court as well.
As we were talking about, the kind of big focus for a lot of us has been on these state House races. I mean, there's kind of a lot hanging on this. Listeners in this area have a lot of these state House races. There's 65 of the 100 House seats have contested races, and Democrats have a narrow hold on the House of Representatives. They have 53 of the 100 seats right now, Republicans have had their eye on the House for a long time. Now having a Republican governor, and for the past 16 years having a Republican Senate, if they get that Republican House, turn that House Republican, they'll have kind of a Republicans would have a clear legislative path, for passing some of those high priority bills they've been trying to pass for the past few years.
What's interesting too about this election, it's a presidential election year, so you're going to have a higher turnout, I think, normally than you would have, and the people that come out are going to be voting in that race, and then they're going to go to these other races, and if you're not locally plugged in, you're not going to recognize who these people are, and so then it becomes a choice. Okay, well, I'm just going to vote straight Republican, or I'm just going to vote straight Democrat. So these House candidates kind of have a challenge in trying to, you know, they're either going to try to, you know, hook their wagons to one of the presidential candidates, or they're going to really try to differentiate themselves and say, look, vote for me, and try to get their names out, which is difficult in a House race where you don't typically have a lot of money to spend to get your name out there.
And there's little doubt that Kentucky is a red state when it comes to the presidential election. Little doubt that Trump will carry Kentucky.
Oh, easily.
What will that the Trump candidacy, and there's been speculation, though, about the effect it may have down ballot in terms of the state's House of Representatives. Could it cause the House to flip, as the Republicans have called for it to do so, or could there be another effect as a result?
I don't know that we know for sure. Historically, the House districts have not been affected by those upper ballot things because, you know these people. The districts are relatively small. They tend to be personality races. You know, you see these people at the local diner. You may go to church with them. This year, however, may be different. The Republicans have in the past, at every other level, tied Democrats to the national party, and it's worked. It hasn't worked in the House races, but Trump is going to win some sections of Kentucky by enormous margins. And while people split their tickets more often than they used to, there are also going to be a lot of people who come out for Trump who don't traditionally go to the polls. They're going to be relatively new voters. And I think those people are likely to vote straight ticket. So it's a challenge for Democrats. We won't know for sure until we see the results.
Yeah, I really agree with Ronnie on that. You know, when I first moved here in 2014, I covered the U.S. Senate race between Mitch McConnell and Alison Lundgren Grimes. And everybody thought the Republicans would have a really good shot to take the House that year. And Mitch McConnell won by, what was it, like 15 and a half points? And the Republicans did not pick up one seat. And I was flabbergasted by that. I thought, how is that possible? And so that the whole time I'm thinking, well, it's not a sure thing, no matter who's on the presidential ballot. But Trump really does change the game for exactly the reasons that Ronnie said. And I think the biggest impact you're going to see on that is Eastern Kentucky, where he's going to have margins that are just insane in some of those counties. And so it's going to really put a burden on some of these Democrats running out there. Dan DeRocher for the Herald Leader, he had a really interesting story about that this week, looking at some of the voter registration patterns in Eastern Kentucky and how that could impact those races. And it's going to be an issue.
That's one of the really interesting demographic nuggets about Kentucky, is that it's, you know, majority of voters in Kentucky are registered Democratic. And in a lot of these House districts, same deal. They're, you know, majority Democratic. And so there's this little phenomenon that we see in which for the longest time, or at least for the past 20 years or so, it's been Kentuckians, you know, voting Republican on these federal elections for president, for Senate, many times for Congress, and then they'll either split the ticket and vote Democratic for these more local House races. And you know, a lot of the speculation is that it's, you know, that's starting to flow down the ballot, that, you know, people are increasingly starting to, you know, possibly vote more Republican down there.
But is it not possible, though, the folks may still hold on to their party loyalty to the Democratic candidates, but Trump is their guy in terms of their choice for presidency?
It's certainly possible. I'm like Adam. I think in Eastern Kentucky, he's likely to have more effect than he does in other parts of the state because of the coal issue. There's something else that distinguishes this year from 2014. McConnell thought himself in a very tight race early on, and he sucked all the air out of the room and the money. And you had a Democratic governor. This time around, at least so far, the Gray-Paul campaign does not look particularly competitive. There's not a lot of outside money coming in. And you have a Republican governor. So the Republicans tend to be much better funded for the House races. And it's just a much steeper climb, a hill to climb for the Democrats than it was 2 years ago.
And I want to point out, too, that the Democrats' response to this, at least so far, appears to be they're trying to make the race about Matt Bevin.
Yes.
They believe that he is unpopular, and they believe that they can use some of these court decisions that he has lost recently and some of his decisions, especially about when it comes to education funding, to say, look, you need us in place to be a stopgap for this guy. And I'm not sure how good that's going to do. I'm not sure how impactful that's going to be, because I don't know, you know, the most recent numbers we have on him is the election, and he won a lot of those Eastern Kentucky districts.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, a reporter's roundtable. We're talking politics, talking the election, and we specifically chose to schedule this show a few days before the close of voter registration to kind of hope that we can, as a public service, encourage listeners to make sure that they're registered to vote. You can do so online, as the Secretary of State told us earlier in the program. I can't quite exactly remember the
GoVoteKY.com.
Thank you, Ryland Barton. We appreciate that public service announcement. GoVoteKY.com. October 11th, the deadline for registering to vote. And, of course, in long public radio, public service tradition, we encourage folks to get registered and to participate. And we encourage you to participate in our show with your questions, your comments, your stories about this election, elections past, your feelings about this presidential race, your feelings about the Senate race, the U.S. House of Representative races, the state general assembly races, or other races. Is there something really interesting, a race in your community that we're not talking about because we just don't know about it here in Richmond or the Lexington area? Please let us know by calling 800-621-8890 or send us an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Let me come back to Ronnie Ellis. You were about to jump in on something, but I'd like to talk about the Senate race. I hope that's where you were about to go. Rand Paul is the incumbent. This is his first term, right? So he's coming up on the end of his first 6 years. And Jim Gray is. There was some question about whether or not there would be a viable candidate that the Democrats could bring forward for this race. And are we saying that the race is not any closer than it is because Jim Gray is just not a candidate with the stature who can really take on a Rand Paul?
Well, first of all, I guess as full disclosure, I should point out that I've known Jim since we were in high school together. I've known his family we're from the same hometown. He's very bright and he's very articulate. He is in many ways the sort of Democrat who can win in conservative areas because of his business acumen and background. He's the Gray Construction Companies, built a lot of factories and they can claim job creation through that. But he's running in an increasingly red state. Rand Paul kind of was the harbinger of the Tea Party wave back in 2010. He's an underrated politician. The race is not getting the attention it might normally get. We talked about this earlier, that so much of the reporters and the press time is being taken by the various Bevin controversies. And Trump sucks a lot of the air out of the room as well. Paul is going around the state doing town halls. Gray is trying to make the case that he's more interested in running for president than he is in being Kentucky senator, that he's not interested in Kentucky issues as he is with national issues. Again, I think those might have some effect as messages if he can get it out.
And part of the deal is we can't really underestimate the power that running for president has on name recognition, on name ID, mm-hmm. and having been in Senate for 6 years and having run a pretty high profile Senate race in 2010. Rand Paul is, he has kind of saturated the market in terms of people knowing his name. Jim Gray, he's mayor of Lexington, relatively popular in Lexington, but outside of the big the big metropolitan areas in Kentucky, I don't think he's so well known, and he really hasn't had the opportunity to get better known because there haven't been any debates so far this campaign.
And he was really hindered too. And Ronnie, you touched on this, but he was really hindered too by the 2015 election results. I mean, that just really took a lot of the momentum away from Democrats and really kind of threw a wrench in their plans. I mean, Adam Eland was all set to go, and lost. And then they had to scramble and find some other people. And so it really helps when you have a governor of the state that's of your same party. And when you don't have that, it's hard. It's much harder.
Let's come back to the issues that are apparently taking a lot of attention, the issues with the governor and the court decisions and other controversies that have surrounded the governor. The latest story about the governor encouraging preachers to ignore the 1964 federal law that prohibits electioneering, campaigning on the part of churches, that in theory, I guess, threatens their tax-exempt status if they get involved directly in politics. Although in many communities, the churches have always been very active politically, at least in giving people direction and saying this is, at least you need to follow these approaches when you go to the polls. The court decisions, the issues, the governor's decision to unilaterally restrict the flow of funds to the universities and the colleges in the state, and the court reversing that decision. What else is hanging out there as well in terms of the court challenges to the governor right now?
Well, we still don't have a decision in the case that Stumbo, House Speaker Greg Stumbo, brought challenging some of Governor Bevin's budget vetoes and vetoes of other legislation at the end of the session. That case is still before, I believe it's Judge Shepard, and we're waiting on a ruling in that. We're also waiting on a final ruling in a workers' compensation case that's before the court about whether Bevin has the authority to remake a board that appoints or recommends judges to be appointed. And we're also waiting on a ruling on the retirement system board and whether that Bevin's rulings are decision to abolish and replace that board can stand.
And the University of Louisville decision was, where does that stand again, Ryland? I know you're closer to that story.
The court ruled against the governor's actions reorganizing that board. And the governor indicated that he would appeal, but I don't think it's officially been appealed yet to the to either the Kentucky Court of Appeals or to the Kentucky Supreme Court.
I mean, do these rulings against the governor, do they hurt him? Do they harm him in any way, shape, or form? There are folks who talk about the potential, and I don't know if it's a frivolous mention or not, of impeachment over some of these actions, especially such as encouraging folks to violate the federal law.
Well, there's not going to be any impeachment, even if the Democrats hold on to the House. The way that works, the House serves as a kind of a grand jury, and they have to bring the impeachment charge, but then the trial occurs in the Senate, and the Republican Senate's not going to do that. I don't think they could probably pass it into the House anyway. But as far as whether the suits hurt him, it depends. I think if he continues to lose, the cumulative effect could begin to work against him. Because what these rulings are basically saying is that he's overreaching in his use of executive power. That's the criticism that he has made against Washington and President Obama, and the sort of thing that he more or less ran against.
Accusing Governor Beshear of overusing his executive power,
exactly,
and granting pardons to felons and so forth.
Now, I don't know that we're there. I think it would have to be a cumulative effect. We talked about his Democrats running against him, and they certainly are trying to, and that may work for them. But I think a lot of the political echo chamber in Frankfurt underestimates the strength of his following out in the state. I think he remains pretty reasonably popular out in the state, I'll put it that way, because they see him as somebody they sent to Frankfurt to shake things up, and he's doing that. Now, there may be an aspect of this that the jury's out, and that's where the cumulative effect of the courts could come in over time.
And plus, you look at some of the wording in these decisions, and from Judge Shepard's opinions especially, he uses some pretty harsh language, which Democrats could then use in political ads. I believe some of the phrases, Ronnie, correct me if I'm wrong, include abuse of power. And, you know, when Judge Shepard really took Bevin to task over using state troopers to threaten the arrest of the chairman of the former chairman of that time of the board, of the Kentucky Retirement Systems Board. So these court decisions, you could see them linger, especially next year, this year in the fall, and then, you know, when Bevin runs for reelection.
Yeah. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We need to take a short break, and we'll be back. We have another 20 minutes or so, and on this Thursday morning, we're live, so we'd encourage you to be part of our conversation. Our reporters roundtable, Adam Beam, Ronnie Ellis, and Ryland Barton in the studio. Your questions, your comments, your personal stories, your observations on this important 2016 general election, 800-621-8890. Send an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, 800-621-8890. We would love to get you involved in our conversation. We're interested in what you're thinking about in this 2016 election season. 33 days away is the time as of this live broadcast on Thursday morning, the November 8th election. I suspect that every single one of us around this table and everyone listening in will take a gigantic gasp and go, a gasp of relief at midnight on November 8th, November 9th, or the next day that the election is past this before all that.
God willing.
Well, I would say that depends, because if we have some seismic shift and the House flips to Republican control, our reporting would just begin. we would have a lot of stories to come out of that, too.
Well, that'll keep you all employed in the coming year. And actually, we have one email we'll get to in just a moment, and we want to get listeners involved in the conversation. But let's turn a little bit toward, just look ahead a little bit toward the next session of the General Assembly. Do we have a sense? Is the House going to flip and we're going to have a Republican governor, a Republican Senate, a Republican House of Representatives? Is the current relative balance going to stay in place with Democrats continuing to control the House? Then either way, this is a budget year, right? So we've got this is not the budget year.
Short one.
It's the short session. What's
it's
lying
not
out
scheduled
there?
As a budget year. It might end up being if the Republicans take control.
They could revise the budget?
Well, they could open it back up, and there's already been some talk that I think Senator Damon Thayer talked about possibly doing this, that they might open up the budget and retake that $18 million back from the universities that the courts restored. I've heard some Republican House candidates talk about that as well.
Are you all even thinking, though, about the General Assembly at this point?
No.
We're going to get a break for Thanksgiving and Christmas,
well,
I guess.
It's hard to think about what they're going to do when we don't know who's going to be running the show. And, you know, politically, whoever wins and loses, there's going to be changes. You know, if the Democrats win, then Jeff Hoover, I believe, has said that he would step down as Republican leader. So we have new leadership in the Republican side. And then, you know, if the Republicans win, then, you know, Stumbo would be out and all the leadership would be out. You have new leadership and it'd just be chaos, you know. And so it's just hard to tell what they're going to do when you don't know who's going to be deciding things.
I think it's pretty much a toss-up. We don't know. We don't really know what's going to happen this election in terms of the state house. I mean, I think that we can, you know, there's probably a short list of some Republican priorities that would pass if Republicans were to take control of the House. You know, right to work legislation has been a big ticket priority of the governor. Forbids unionized companies from requiring workers to pay union dues as a condition of employment. Medical review panels, it kind of creates another anybody who files a medical malpractice lawsuit, that lawsuit would first be reviewed by a panel to determine if it can be eligible to even go to the courts. And probably some pro-life legislation.
Some states, the transgender
that's what I was going to say.
Bathroom issue
interested in that one because the Senate passed that overwhelmingly and it died in the House. But I'm curious to see if the Republicans would still be willing to go there given what's the furor that's happened in North Carolina. You know, I wonder if that would have a chilling effect. Maybe not.
Well, I think they would normally be not only willing but in a hurry to go there, except the enormous love for basketball in this state. I don't think they will have missed the fact that NCAA games got moved out of North Carolina over this. And I think there would probably be, because Kentucky has the Yum Center and the Rupp Arena sites that could conserve. I'm like Rylan, I really think the House is a toss-up. I talk to the so-called smart money people in either party, and I've been struck by they both give me the same margin. They think it'll end up 51-49, but one side thinks it'll be Republican. And I don't think we know. I don't think we know about the impact of Trump. I do think that I think there may be some surprises if the Republicans take control. I don't think right to work, for instance, is going to be as easy as they think it is. Right to work is not entirely popular in the House Republican caucus. Now, depending on new members coming in on that issue, and some Democrats will vote for it, they may be able to pass it. But there are people in the Republican caucus who do not want to go there. If the Democrats hold on, it'll be interesting to see. I think there will be leadership challenges even if the Democrats hold on. So it's really an unknown. But there will be sea changes if the Republicans take over. There's no question about that.
800-621-8890. We encourage you to participate in our conversation, our reporters' roundtable. I know they're interesting, but we'd like you to get involved in the conversation. Stop listening for a second and speak for a few moments and maybe get a reaction from our reporters on the presidential race, on the other federal offices, the House and the Senate, as well as the General Assembly races and other races that are on your mind, other issues on your mind this election year. 800-621-8890. Send a tweet at WEKUEST, and we'd love to acknowledge your tweet and use your comments on the air. Here is an email from listener John from Berea, and he asks, what is the viability of Nancy Jo Kemper in the 6th District? What did the September 30th FEC deadline reveal about the differences in total fundraising and cash on hand? What kind of traction does she have outside of the urban and suburban areas? Is Andy Barr going to try and make an issue of coal again like he did against Ben Chandler?
Well, I don't think we know the results of the September 30th fundraising deadline yet. I'm looking at my fellow media panelist here. I don't think so. We can't answer that question.
This is the release of documentation where the money came from.
There's
and where
usually
it's being
grace
spent.
Periods, and we'll know like within a couple of days, I think. I expect Andy Barr to have more money than Nancy Jo Kemper, just given the fact that he's an incumbent, and incumbents tend to raise more than challengers as a rule. Secondly, as far as her viability, Andy Barr does not appear to be making coal a huge part of his campaign this year. Looking at his advertisements and his speeches, he tends to focus more on the heroin epidemic and his efforts to combat that by creating a task force and trying to insert ideas into federal legislation. While it might not be bills that he passed, it's ideas that he tacked on to federal legislation. I think that district is interesting in the sense that it was drawn by Democrats to benefit a Democrat, and Andy Barr continues to win there. And with Trump at the top of the ticket, it certainly does give me pause to think maybe that might give Nancy Jo Kemper a boost. It's really hard to beat an incumbent always, and so it's still going to be a tough road for her. But out of all the House races in Kentucky, that will be the one that will be the most competitive.
There seems to be kind of a similar thing going on with the U.S. Senate race between Rand Paul and Jim Gray. I mean, Nancy Jo Kemper, probably not incredibly well known in the district. Certainly within the political circles, people remember her time, lobbying in Frankfurt
with the Kentucky Council of Churches.
Yeah, and she's repeatedly tried to make the campaign have an issue. And also, I believe, there's also a situation where she wanted to debate Representative Barr, but he declined the debate. I guess another little blip was she came out and had a press conference calling for Governor Bevin to be impeached after his bloodshed comments, in which he was saying that to survive a Hillary Clinton presidency, conservatives mm-hmm. might have to shed the blood of tyrants and patriots.
And it worked. I mean, she got more media attention for that, mm-hmm. I think, than anything else she's done in her campaign. I mean, everybody was there for that news mm-hmm. conference.
Yeah. But, it quieted down a bit after that. And a big part of it is that there's no opportunity. There's no time in which we're seeing these two candidates on stage together actually, talking about the issues.
Very quick, John in his email says, one of the most insightful reporting on state issues has come from John Cheeves. Is he still working for the Herald Leader? He is, right?
He's still.
So, John, thank you for that email to WEKU Eastern Standard@gmail.com. Let's go to the phone. And on the line, we have Kevin, a truck driver on the highway. Kevin, thanks for being part of our show. You're on the air with our reporters. Go right ahead.
Quick question. With the Republican former head of Homeland Security all of a sudden backing Hillary, what do you think the impact of that is? I'm going to listen to you guys and sign off.
All right, Kevin, thanks for calling in. The Republican former head of Homeland Security, I don't know if that's something that came out today.
I haven't heard that. I would say, there seems to be a higher proportion of Republican officials and high-ranking Republican officials who have crossed over to support Hillary Clinton in this election. So it's not, I wouldn't say it's totally surprising.
And traditionally Republican newspapers as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems not to have had much an impact on Trump.
People don't pay attention to newspaper endorsements, do they?
Not as much as I suppose we would like them to.
They cancel subscriptions, apparently.
But I think Republican endorsements of Clinton have been especially prominent among military and foreign policy experts, and that may have an impact.
800-621-8890 is our phone number. You can send us a tweet at WEKUEST. Email us, WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. Now, Roger, by Twitter, says, why would Kentucky be Southern or red? We remained in the Union and sent twice as many to the Union Army, not truly Southern. And then Roger followed up with another message. No one I talk to likes Bevin. Where's the proof he's popular? Democrats stayed home last November. Won't repeat it.
Which question first?
Yeah, really.
The reason he alludes to the Southern aspect, he's right. Kentucky sent more soldiers to the Union side than they did the Confederacy. You know, the joke about Kentucky, or the old saw is that we joined the Confederacy after Appomattox. Hmm. And in fact, that is kind of what happened. Because of our resistance to the abolition of slavery, even though we fought on the Union side, there were federal troops quartered here and stationed here to enforce the abolition of slavery. And Kentucky pretty much became Southern thereafter. Bevin is very unpopular in circles and in urban areas and among certain people, but I do not think there is evidence that he is widely unpopular among the general population when you get outside of the urban areas. And again, I continue to believe that there's not great enthusiasm. It's not like somebody who's been following or supporting Wendell Ford for 40 years. Or Mitch McConnell, but they think he's doing what he said he would do, and they're kind of waiting to see how some things come out. They might switch, but as of the moment, I think he's more popular out in the state than people give him credit for.
I wanted to jump in on the "Is Kentucky Southern?" question, because I have this debate with my editor all the time, and I come from South Carolina, which I don't think anybody would question is a Southern state.
And so, very, very clear credentials there.
Right, yes, correctly. So when I moved here, I always thought Kentucky is a Southern state, but then I was learning all the history of it really surprised me. And of course, the first thing that jumped out at me was the rotunda of the Capitol, where you have the statues of Abraham Lincoln and Jefferson Davis within like 10 feet of each other. And so my argument has always been that Kentucky is a Southern state because it is culturally Southern. It identifies more with the Southern states than it does the Midwestern states. And that's been my experience since I've moved here. I don't know if you guys agree.
I think that's right.
It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking politics with Adam Beam, Ronnie Ellis, and Ryland Barton. And on this Thursday morning, we have 5 minutes remaining for your call, your question, your story at 800-621-8890, and I would encourage using the phone as the best way to communicate, to be part of our conversation, 800-621-8890. Debates underway. We've got another presidential debate happening Sunday evening, three presidential debates, one vice presidential debate. You all have any observations on the debates and what's happening in terms of the interaction among the candidates, and specifically focusing on Kentucky? Do Kentuckians, do our readers, our listeners, are they paying attention to these interactions, or are all the decisions, are the minds made up in terms of where they're going
to
vote?
I think everybody's paying attention to the debates. Just look at the ratings. I mean, it's amazing how many people tune into those things. I think it was excess of 80 million people that watched the first one. My thought of going into the debates was I thought it had more benefit for Trump than it did for Clinton, just because a debate is like a reality TV show, and Trump is a reality TV star. This is his medium. But I was really surprised, and looking at that first debate, I thought it was reversed. I thought it actually helped Hillary more than it helped Trump as the debate wore on. But as far as it going to impact Kentucky voters, I don't think so. I think most people here have their minds made up. But it is fascinating to watch the two of them and the dynamic between the two of them as they debate.
It won't affect Kentucky, or if it does, it'll only affect it on the margins. The first debate had a huge impact on the race. The numbers, the polling numbers, you know, by wide margins, Hillary was seen to have won it and to have looked presidential. And if you look at the horse race polling that has occurred since then, you know, Trump had closed the gap to next to nothing, and now she's pulling back away.
I think one reason we should be watching these debates and paying attention is just thinking about how these affect voter turnout you know, whether people continue this sentiment of "I'm just sick of this," I'm sick of, you know, the way the current political system in the country. I mean, that's kind of the big theme of this whole election, and, you know, especially in this election, which we have the two most unpopular presidential candidates in modern history.
There's one aspect of this race we haven't talked about, and while it doesn't impact Kentucky directly, and that's the U.S. Senate hangs in the balance, and what the impact that can have for decades on the U.S. Supreme Court. And Trump's continued fall, I believe, has put the Senate back in play.
Well, that would affect Kentucky, because if the Senate were to switch hands, we would no longer have the majority leader of the Senate.
Exactly.
And we have a caller on the line. We're not going to get to Jay from Barberville because we're running out of time, but he raises the question of the fact that there have been no debates in the Senate race. I assume he's speaking about the Rand Paul, Jim Gray race. There will be one debate on KET.
Halloween.
Yeah, one week before the election.
I mean, where does our friend Bill Goodman come into play here? Right? For Bill from KET,
Bill
who does
moderate
Kentucky
that
tonight.
And does a very good job on those, I think. And
he's outstanding.
And there's a reason why the candidates such as Rand Paul will participate in that debate.
Yeah, the KET debate is the one you kind of can't say no to. It's a non-partisan. People look at KET as independent, as not playing favorites on either side. And it's broadcast statewide. So it's not just one media market. Everybody in Kentucky gets to see it.
It's also 9 days before Election Day.
Right, so it's very important.
We're going to be watching very carefully, and, of course, we pay attention to the reporting from our friends Adam Beam, Ronnie Ellis, and Ryland Barton, and I hope you all are on board for the show we have planned for the week after the election. We're planning to bring these guys back here around the table. It'll all be over. We'll know what has happened, and we'll hope to hear from our listeners as well. Thank you all for the work that you're doing, keeping us informed as we move just 33 days until the 2016 general election. That's it for Eastern Standard for this week, a production of Eastern Kentucky University, WEKU Public Radio. Our program is produced by Marissa Hempel, by Brian Burkhart, and... Come on, let me stop that. I cannot remember. Grant Willoughby, and Brian Bartlett is at the controls. My apologies, I'm not looking at the script here. I'm relying on my memory. Thanks for participating in the show. Write to us at any time, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com with your comments, your suggestions for the program, as well as your interactions to things that happen here. The program repeats on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock, and it will be available as a podcast from WEKU.FM. Thanks for tuning in.